Hello and welcome to Euactiv's Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foote.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euactiv's Agri-Food News team. Of course, this week, all eyes and ears are on the Common Agricultural Policy reform. Everyone's talking about CAP. Actually, negotiators are sealing a deal on the CAP, literally as we speak, as we record this podcast. Of course, we're following all of the developments on the CAP reform as they happen, and we'll bring this to you. We're going to bring you articles and analysis and everything else. But we will be talking about this in more depth on next week's podcast. So never fear, we will be here to talk all things CAP. But in the meantime, while we wait until that episode comes, we have for you on the same theme, on a similar theme on the CAP and its environmental ambitions. Today, we actually have an interview with Jindrik Dolezal, who is part of the European Court of Auditors. So he was part of the team that put together a recent report on CAP funding for climate change. And so we spoke to him to hear a little bit more about what this report was and what it found. Could you maybe give us a quick overview of this report and its main findings?
Climate action has become one of the 9 objectives of the Common Agriculture Policy since 2013. And because the Commission attributed over 100 billion of euro over the period 2014-2020, we found it important to actually audit what was the impact of this fund on the climate. So our aim was actually to investigate whether the CAP supported climate mitigation practices that have potential to reduce or remove greenhouse gas emissions, and whether actually the uptake of the climate mitigation practices has increased in this 2014-2020 period compared to the 2007-2013 period. What was our overall finding, which actually we knew at the beginning, that this 100 billion euro actually make very little impact on the greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture, as these have not changed since 2010. We have structured our report around 3 main sources of agriculture emissions. These are animals, breeding of animals, fertilizing of soil, and using land. In terms of livestock emissions, which account for around half of the emissions, we found that the emissions are stable and that the CAP does not seek to limit the livestock numbers and doesn't provide a real incentive to reduce them. We also found that, maybe on the contrary, that there are measures under CAP which may increase or promote the consumption of meat products, and that the consumption of meat products have not changed since 2014. In terms of emissions from use of chemical fertilizers and manure, which account for around a quarter of the greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture, we found that there are some measures which were largely supported by the CAP, like organic farming or grain legumes, but that these have an unclear impact, and overall the emissions from the use of chemical fertilizers and manure have even increased between 2010 and 2018. During our review of studies, we identified a number of really effective practices that may reduce these emissions from the use of fertilizers, chemical fertilizers and manure, but these were rarely supported by the CAP. The last key source of emissions in the agriculture is the land use, and mainly the cultivation of drain peatlands, which emits 20% of the EU 27 agriculture emissions. Although there was some support available for their restoration and revetting, it was rarely used. And what's a bit bizarre, that the framework of the CAP is such that actually it pays direct payments to farmers who actually cultivate these drained peatlands. And when you actually revet it, you may have a problem to be eligible for these direct payments. So this serves as kind of a disincentive for the farmers really to revet drained peatlands, which they cultivate. We as well noticed that or found that there was not really an increased support for afforestation, agroforestry, and conversion of arable land to permanent grassland during the 2014-2020 compared to the 2007 and 2013. And lastly, maybe why things have not improved, the reason is that actually the measures available have not changed really much. So the rural development measures remain more or less the same as they were before, the same to cross compliance. And the new scheme, which was supposed to improve the environmental performance of the CAP, the greening, actually have not delivered and had a very marginal impact on climate. So we have three things which we recommend. So we want the CAP to reduce the emissions from agriculture, incentivizing some climate effective measures to reduce emissions from use of fertilizers and livestock. We want the Commission to take steps to reduce emissions from cultivated drain organic soils. And we want the Commission to report regularly on the impact of the CAP on climate mitigation.
So thanks for this, for giving us this good eagle-eyed view of the report. But I want to ask you if you could tell us a bit more about the methodology of this report, because of course it's about data, and you actually highlighted that lack of data is an issue. So what data are you basing the report off, and how did you reach these conclusions?
In terms of emissions, that's quite straightforward. We looked at the greenhouse gas inventories available for all EU27 member states. So while these greenhouse gas inventories may not take into account of all the climate mitigation measures supported with the CAP, when we discussed this issue with the member states and to which we actually sent to all of them a questionnaire, with that question, we realized that maybe some measures are not covered, but most of the measures are covered. So actually the information on the emissions which are reported in these greenhouse gas inventories reasonably well reflect the situation. Where we see a huge problem is to find the information on the uptake of the mitigation practices and what might be their impact on greenhouse gas emissions. How we wanted to go about it is that we created a questionnaire which contained, with an expert, which contained about over 100 mitigation practices. And we asked each member state to provide us information on these mitigation practices since 2010. And of course, direct us, you know, under which CAP support this mitigation measure is supported. So this was our kind of main basis actually to collect information on the uptake of the mitigation practices. Then naturally we had interviews and with experts. We corroborated the data we received from member states from where possible with the data from Eurostat. But throughout the report, you may say that there are a number of issues where we had a problem to get the data. For example, organic farming, we have data on the uptake. It is increasing. That's very good. But we don't know what happened actually at farm level. What has been actually the decrease or the impact of a farmer, you know, turning from an intensive farmer or conventional farmer to organic farmer, and what has happened on the farm. So that's a basic information we would think would be necessary to assess the impact of the organic farming, and that information is not available. So actually, throughout our report, we highlighted areas where we had a problem and with a lack of data, but I think we try to do our best, what is possible. And I think that's why we have in our recommendations that the Commission should assess it, because I think the key is to set up the system in a way that allows them to have the data available and to assess the impact of the CAP measures on climate.
So you've already highlighted that one area of the report that was particularly harsh, maybe in its criticism, is on the inaction on livestock farming. So this is likely to cause quite a stir in the farming community, particularly in certain member states. So maybe you could elaborate a little bit on why there was this targeting of the livestock sector specifically, and also concretely the kind of actions that you'd like to see in the future. And I'm also wondering, so it seems to me that this is based off some kind of, you know, assumptions about greenhouse gas emissions of livestock, but does this also take into account also the merits of livestock in terms of soil health and carbon storage in the soil. I'm wondering maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on that.
Once actually you look at the key sources of the greenhouse gas emission from agriculture, livestock is the key source. So when you look only at the enteric fermentation and the manual storage, it's 50%. If you take actually into account as well what animals has to eat, and it has to be produced using fertilizers or imported from third countries in terms of soybeans, and may lead to deforestation, and so having, you know, another bad impact on the climate, we have a graph which actually says that the carbon footprint of animal products is even higher, is over 80%. So it's difficult actually to try to somehow reduce the greenhouse gas emissions from agriculure, not tackling, avoiding to do anything for the animals. And unfortunately, almost 40% of these emissions come from enteric fermentation, where currently there is no available technology to reduce it, although there is one in a pipeline in terms of like a feed additives. That's a bit more suitable for intensive indoor breeding rather than extensive ones. So the only way how actually one would reduce the emissions from livestock is by the reduction of the livestock. And what was interesting, this our report was published, and I read an article one day later that France has decided that they will reduce their livestock by 2050 by, I think it's 30 or 25%. So it's really, really a huge commitment. We'll see how they will do it. But I think everyone agrees that somehow the number of the livestock has to be reduced. And it probably has to go hand in hand with the reduction in the consumption. Because if you reduce the livestock numbers, then if you don't reduce the consumption, there is a bit of risk of leakage. Although maybe, as we have a quite high trade barriers for the import of the, especially of the cat beef meat, maybe if we reduce, there will always be globally benefits because it's more difficult to import the beef. Plus, another element is that there are discussions about this carbon border tax. So that would again make the conditions for selling the meat in Europe the same for the importers as well, so that would make it better, and reduction in the livestock would actually pay off in reduction of the emissions. If you purely look at the climate mitigation, I think there is not a major difference between extensive and intensive farming. But of course, extensive farming in terms of breeding animals is quite good for biodiversity and may avoid land abandonment and things like that. But on the other hand, afforestation of some poor land, or revetting, or bringing the water table up on some pastures would reduce significantly the emissions, because you would have a less livestock, and then these emissions, which are currently significant on these drained peatlands, would stop because you would raise the water, you would restore it. So I think all these measures should have to be somehow taken. I think we cannot probably live without intensive breeding, because we would not produce maybe enough food. But extensive is good for biodiversity. But some sort of a reduction is probably necessary. Otherwise, we will not be able to really reduce. If you accumulate all the other aspects is due to livestock emissions, then you cannot do much with the rest, because you need the nitrogen for the crops to grow. So you can, of course, reduce it somehow, but again, you cannot avoid it completely. So for that reason, I think that the reduction is necessary, because simply it just accounts for such a large share of the emissions, and without touching it, we wouldn't move into the right direction.
And also the report put forward this idea of polluter pays principle being applied to agriculture. So what do you feel this is necessary in farming? And I know also that the auditors have a report coming out on this soon. So will this explore the idea further?
What we are very pleased that the Commission accepted our finding and will carry a study actually to look how it would be possible to implement the polluter pay principle into agriculture. In theory, you can have a two ways, probably. One is some sort of a carbon tax. The other one is maybe cap and trade, which is more like the emission trading system. But it is much more difficult to implement than how the emission trading scheme is easy, because it's a big installations which are under that schemes, and it's easy to measure the emissions. You know, there is an easy calculation of it. In agriculture, to calculate an emissions per farm is quite complicated and not an easy exercise, and measure the possible reductions is as well quite complicated. So it's not easy, but I think it needs to be done for two reasons. First reason is that those who actually emit have somehow, you know, pay for it. That's the pay to pay principle. So you cannot, the externalities have to be somehow incorporated into the price. So in the end, you know, the consumer will feel the difference as well. So if the production of a beef, the externality that it causes, it increases emissions, is not incorporated in the price, then people can continue buying it because it's cheap. Well, if there was a carbon tax, maybe people will move more to plant-based diet. So one element is to make the difference between the food which is produced with less emissions and food which is produced with more emissions. And second element, which I think is equally important, to reward somehow farmers who will invest the money into climate beneficial practices, and who will spend the money, because even if there are incentives from the EU, you always have to, most of them, co-finance. So I think that would be a good thing, is that if someone is actually, you know, really introducing effective climate mitigation practices, you know, that there is some sort of an incentive. So maybe the carbon tax is different, or he's treated differently somehow. Because otherwise, why should a farmer invest into climate friendly practices when maybe it's not profitable? He's spending his money and lowering his profit. So I think it's important to incorporate that, to actually incorporate that externality into business decisions of the farmers, you know, whether he should invest in the climate mitigation practices or not, and then give the signal as well to the consumer. So maybe even a possibility of some sort of a consumer pay policy might be as well, you know, a simplified carbon tax on a beef, you know, could be one possibility as well.
It's definitely an interesting idea, and it was interesting to see as well that the Commission was, I mean, they responded quite favourably to the idea in their feedback. I wanted to turn now to a slightly wider question, a more general question. So we had a look back on some of the other reports from the Court of Auditors to do with the cap, and we found that there's been quite a historical criticism of the cap from the auditors. And I wanted to hear from you your opinion of whether you feel that your reports are listened to and kind of taken seriously enough. I mean, we looked back at one from 2008, I think it was, warning that the plans to reform the cap were not ambitious enough. Do you feel that these reports have enough impact and are listened to enough by decision makers?
We are auditors. We try to look what are the objectives of the policy and whether they are somehow achieved. To be honest, with CAP, we had truly many, many reports which were very critical. I think the main reason for the CAP might be that although there have been a number of reforms, I don't think that a significant change has taken place. And with the arrival of kind of more environmental and the climate objectives, the CAP has not changed that, although it has been kind of sold to the citizens that it's going to do more. Something like with the greening, now we have a new scheme, it will do a lot better. And when you look actually what greening has caused, is it has not really pushed the farmers to change the practices. The change to practices is, I think we had a report, like I think it's 1 or 2% maximum in changing the practices of the farmers. So we, of course, think most of our recommendations are addressed to the Commission. And I think Commission has sometimes a difficulty. I think now they're pushing for a bit more environmental friendly and climate friendly CAP. But I think there is a big opposition in the member states from the council. And the reason is, I think that farmers are a strong electorate in member states and a strong unified community. And it's very difficult for them. They are naturally scared that they are going to lose the money, which you know, kind of, if you are receiving money for 20, 30 years, you think that they are for the community and you're afraid that you're going to lose them. So I think what needs to happen is, and I think it's with every of the reform, there is a stronger and stronger pressure to do better for the environment and climate. And we'll see what will happen. But we hope that somehow our report now could a bit maybe a contribute, because I think there is a bit of momentum that things maybe can go better if things are agreed. But very much as well, it will depend on, in the end, it will depend with this CAP, what the individual member states include in these CAP strategic plans, whether they will take the problem seriously. And whether they really would like to farmers to do things, you know, and to incentivize the farmers to do maybe more effective measures, you know, either for biodiversity or for climate, you know. In I think it's important. Like we had a report on, you know, I think about the fair income of farmers, which I think that's a key objective for the CAP, and we have been always criticizing, and everyone knows that 80% of the funds goes to 20% of beneficiaries. So, and we know that the Commission is trying to introduce the CAP limits and change that. But again, there's a strong defense in member states where maybe most of the, they have large farms and they're afraid that they would lose a lot of money. So it's a difficult area. And I would say if we were to nowadays start kind of this zero-based budgeting where we would say what the CAP should achieve and we would start from zero, the CAP would look completely different. The problem is the history of the CAP and difficulty to transform. And maybe other funds needs to be created, maybe with a carbon tax and other funds which might be available for the farmers to maybe find a different activities beneficial for climate, which move them away maybe from some of the activities which are harmful for the environment and climate.
And the previous question actually gives me a good segue for the last question, which is related to the current Agriculture Commissioner, Janusz Wojciechowski, who is a former member of the European Court of Auditors. So I would like to know if this thing actually changed the way you've been looked at, I mean, by the Commission, or if it gives some kind of, I don't know, visibility, because he also mentioned a lot the reports that he was working on when he was auditor, for instance, in his press conference. So I would like to know if this changed a bit the visibility that you have. And also your relationship with the Commission.
At the team level, we don't have, usually it doesn't happen that we would meet the Commissioner. So I don't think that there was actually any influence on our audit, you know, that the current Commissioner, he was a former member of the court, I think, at all. Maybe what could help him maybe to understand, you know, how we carry the audits and things like that. But we mostly dealt with people with various DG, DG Agri, DG Klima, and you know, our meetings are, you know, go up to level of a director, but there was no, you know, interaction. I think they have been, of course, communicating with the Commissioner, maybe how our audit is progressing. When we had the draft report, which we maybe shared with the Commission, and then during the adversarial procedure, I can imagine that there might have been some sort of a feedback or information session with the Commissioner to inform him, you know, where we are, what are our major findings, observations and recommendations. But we haven't felt actually any unusual, you know, dealings, because Mr. Wojciechowski was a former member of the court.
So that's all from us this week. And this week, like every week, the Euractiv Agri-Food podcast was produced by Euractiv's Agri-Food news team. That's Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foote, with the support of Euractiv's podcast producer, Evie Curie. And you can also find this podcast on all major streaming platforms. That's Apple, Amazon, Spotify and Stitcher.
And be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss the latest agriculture news from the EU. I'm Gerardo Fortuna. Thanks for listening and see you next week.